IT businesses in Sacramento.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polichuk.
Hi, this is Carl Polichuk, and I'm joined today by Ryan Morris and Dave Sobel, as usual, and this is episode 215 of the Killing It podcast.
And we're back
in a new year.
And I'll throw it out to you guys first, because I have a firm opinion here. It's February. Are you loving winter, or are you hating on winter?
Well, you know, before I moved to California, I spent 7 years in Michigan and vowed that I will never live where it snows again. I can go visit that stuff if I want to. So I'm in sunny California. It's quite delightful, and I'm loving it.
I'm in the foothills in the mountains in Utah. And, you know, right now, while we are recording this, the Winter Olympics are happening, which is cool. I don't know if you guys are watching. It's brilliant. I'm having a tremendous amount of fun. Those games are coming here in 8 years. And on Sunday this week, it was 65 degrees. Our winter, like, I'm with Carl. I don't like the snow. I don't want to be where it's cold. But right about now, I'm kind of freaking out. Like, could we please have a little winter?
So I live in Northern Virginia. Northern Virginia is beautiful, right? It's mid-Atlantic. It's not too far north. It's kind of southern-ish, but it's close enough to north. We have a nice cultural environment. We generally have like kind of rough summer, like of humidity, and it's a little hot. But you know, traditionally our winters have been not too bad. Screw winter. I am so over this sub-freezing. It was like the longest streak of cold in like 80 years in DC for like 2.5 weeks, it's barely gotten above freezing. I'm cold all the time. My outside is full of, we call it snowcrete. It's these giant blocks of ice. I needed a spade to dig out my car. I'm so over all of this. This is not what I signed up for here in this area. I don't have the equipment for it. I'm cold all the time. My house isn't heating right. I'm done. Like, I'm ready for baseball and spring training.
There are homes for sale in California. I'm just saying.
But I like living on the East Coast. That's why I settled here.
See, but also I have good friends who live in places like Erie, Pennsylvania, and they're notorious for lake effect snow.
Oh yeah.
And this year they have had record snow. So when Erie, Pennsylvania says record snow, we all sit up and go, wow, that's not kidding, right? Like, that's a whole lot. Right now, they're taking all the snow and we're just out here in this kind of crispy brown grass, dry world in the 60s. I don't know. Maybe we could smooth it out, just level it out, go north and south again.
Well, you know,
by the time we record our next show, this will all be a different story. That's the deal with weather.
Or a scar that I will never get over. But today's episode is sponsored by the Small Biz Thoughts Technology Community, now powered by the Business of Tech. It's the best deal in online communities for IT business owners. The Small Biz Thoughts Technology Community memberships start at just $799 per year, now including the Business of Tech Plus content as well, so you get all of that. And it also includes a 5-week course at IT Service Provider University. Grab all the details at smallbizthoughts.org.
All righty. Well, just a quick reminder, you know, if you're not subscribed to us on all of the podcatchers, pick your favorite and subscribe to us and give us a thumbs up and rate us and all that happy stuff. Topic number one today, we're going to talk about electricity. And, you know, this is a number of stories have come out recently about what China is doing to increase their electrical capacity, which is phenomenal. Now, just granted, they have no restrictions with regard to what they do to the environment or the human beings who live within their borders. So they can do anything they want, and they have taken hundreds of thousands of acres and dedicated it to solar and wind and other things. And as a result, they have created more extra capacity in the last 4 years than the entire U.S. grid combined. And so the question is, why? Right? They already have electrified their own country. Well, when you look at it, crypto takes computing power. AI takes computing power. Quantum computing will take lots and lots of computing power. And so they're going to be the place where you go to get this stuff, because if you can't get electricity in the United States and you have to do AI, well, your AI has to be in some place where there is electricity. So it's quite interesting, at least from the global perspective. And we'll see if the rest of the world can come around to it by 2030, because they expect to have 6x their current capacity by 2030, which is pretty amazing.
Well, I mean, this is one of those areas where, like, you know, we are definitely in policy, right? And I'm using the word policy more than politics, because we need to understand that, you know, we generally in the U.S., we treat it as a utility. Oftentimes, this is a regulated utility. Oftentimes, then it has, we do allow monopolies in many of these areas. And so we have to understand that we have to make decisions as a society about what's important to us. And so far, to date, investing in this has not proven to be important to us. And I think that is important to highlight, that that is something that we just have to highlight. If we want to solve this problem, we are going to have to invest in this. And that is a combination of understanding the balance of where we want to do that, what the impact in local communities are, where we're going to extract that, and investing in as many power sources as we can. The U.S. has been fuel independent, for your power independent, for a while now, but we're not going to be able to hit our own capacities of growth, particularly is what we're talking about with all of this, with the data center stuff, without serious investments in that. That's going to have to get paid for somewhere, and we're going to have a conversation about how we're doing that.
Yep. You're right on target with the practical reality. I learned a long time ago, growing up in infrastructure parts of the data center world in technology, like, you sell servers. Why do you sell servers? Well, because they run databases. Well, why do you have a database? Well, because it hosts data. Why do you need data? Because it runs an application. The knee bone is connected to the shin bone in all of this technology stack world. But the one common reality among everything is it doesn't do anything more than a data sheet without electricity. And it is no longer reasonable to look at what our past capacity has been or what our past investment protocols have been. As Carl indicates, the exponential growth in requirement and consumption for AI, for modeling, for quantum, the things that we are asking it to do, we will get to the point where literally it is more valuable than air or water. It is going to be we all joke about, well, it's the new oil, right? Like, data is the new thing that keeps the industry running. Okay, the only thing that keeps the industry running is the power that keeps industry running. And if you don't have enough of it, I don't care how cool your reference models are. I don't care how cool your agentic AI platforms and applications become. You can invent the most outlandishly impressive, valuable technology in the history of humankind. And it doesn't mean squat unless you can flip a switch and turn on reliable power. And the numbers that Carl tossed out there blow my mind. Created more collective electrical capacity in China in the last 4 years than the sum total of all of the U.S. We're the largest economy on the planet. And they've created more electricity than we can produce excess in the last 4 years. That's impressive. And we ought to look at that as a competitive threat on technology front, business and finance, precious minerals, political, military. It's going to become the one thing over which all humans argue.
We've covered electricity stories for, 5 years now, right? All the fun little things, Microsoft putting tankers underneath the ocean so that they have, cooling built into their data centers, all that happy stuff. All of those things are tiny little proof of concept things that do not push the needle when it comes to the amount of electricity that AI is requiring. And as you mentioned, the growth is exponential. So this is really something where we haven't built the infrastructure. We literally just have not, and we have to. And I don't know where that begins. You know, China, again, has the ability to just do anything they want, and they got the land for it. I don't even know that unless we take, you know, all of the Western states and cover them with solar panels, I don't know that we have the land for it.
Well, I mean, I look at this and say, like, I do believe there are solutions to these problems. Obviously, the Chinese were able to do it, right? But and at an incredible scale that not, isn't necessarily required to address the problems that we're talking about. We do have a lot of energy. What we also need to invest in is just the basic infrastructure of it. As what happened recently in Texas, you know, I think it was last winter or the winter before, where their power grid just couldn't hold up.
Right.
Like, we're going to have to invest in basic infrastructure maintenance. And by the way, everybody, we got to pay for that. Like, we then are getting into the policy discussions about how we're going to do that, but just hand waving and saying we're not going to do it is not actually an answer.
Yeah, not an answer. And that's the thing, right? As you get into it, you think about this from the perspective of an MSP or a solution provider in any way. Small ball, if you sell anything in technology and you do not also sell power and cooling solutions and specifically uninterruptible power supplies that are data center capacity, if you sell anything and you don't sell that, that's just pure silly. You're leaving money on the table, right? But to go big baseball, to go macro thinking, we need to figure out new solutions for generation, for distribution, for storage, for efficiency and optimization. There are layers to this stuff, right? We need to create more power. The grid needs to get more efficient. We need to be able to store stuff so that we can have electricity when the wind and the sun are not available. All layers of that industry. As a noted battery nerd, I am fascinated with the conversation, but I'm also willing to admit batteries ain't enough, man. You need to generate more power and then distribute it more effectively.
Well, I mean, I wish I had a simple answer. It's not that. This is a complicated problem. Though I think if I'm making it really tactical, particularly for most small, you know, providers here, I think you do need to start having conversations, not just like what Ryan said, but in terms of having uninterruptible power, making sure that, but I think you need to have conversations with your customers about the impact of increased power as part of their budget. Like, I think we oftentimes hand wave some of the elements of the fact that, like, hey, you know, power is just power. You just pay your light bill, right? But I think that portion of bills is going to go up over the next 5 years. And I think you want to have intelligent conversations about budgeting now with your customers. Say, somehow we're all going to be paying for this.
Well,
either budget for it, and or get involved locally to talk to your council people about how this is going to get addressed.
I will say, many years ago, my MSP decided, hey, we're going to help our clients be more efficient with electricity. And we offered them the ability to go around and test, you know, because you can test what every device is drawing, what the total draw of your office is, and all of this kind of stuff, and how much money we could save them if we just replace it with newer equipment or move them to the cloud or whatever. No one was interested because the electricity is included in their rent. So it's invisible to them. They're still paying for it, but they don't see when the electricity goes up that their rent necessarily is directly tied to them.
These days, those numbers have been going up substantially. And so it is worth a conversation. But I'm going to move us on to topic number two. I've been waiting to talk to you guys about this one because I've been tracking over in the business of tech. I've been tracking Thrive Holdings and their investment strategy. Now, Thrive Holdings, big private equity organization. One of their platform companies is Shield Technology Partners. Now, Thrive has put $100 million into Shield Technology Partners. This is Shield's second $100 million raise. And as part of this, OpenAI also did a deal with Thrive where OpenAI is investing in Thrive and putting some of their money where their mouth is. And not only are they putting in their financial resources, but they're putting OpenAI engineers into Thrive platform companies to do deployment and engineering efforts around AI. And they've chosen as one of the industries that they're interested, IT services. So they're going to be building and putting together AI-enabled products within Shield to help Shield's customers. Jens, I look at this and I go, okay, I think this is a big deal. But I'm going to throw it out to you and say, am I right? Am I wrong? What's your take on these big moves from Thrive, OpenAI, and Shield?
I think it'll be interesting to see what they do, especially with regard to delivering services. Like everybody talks about how, oh, you know, your lowest level technicians will be replaced by AI. But a lot of people can't really see, like, okay, how do I actually implement that? And so we may see them actually put that in place. And then a lot of people will say, oh, I could totally copy that, right? And it's often the case that, you know, the first mover, they might win a bunch of market share, but they also pay the highest price to get that thing done. And, you know, I'm remembering, you know, all the fiber that got not deployed and left dark for 10 years before somebody bought it 10 cents on the dollar and made a bunch of money lighting up the fiber. So who knows, it may be a similar thing here, that they're just going to spend a lot of money and it'll take a lot longer than they think it will.
See, and it will take time, but I think we need to begin now, because developing your competitive position to thwart the commoditization that is sure to come from these efforts, right? They're not going to do this in order to charge a premium price in the market for a managed service. They will do it as a way to automate out a chunk of overhead and operating expense so that they can lower the price point and beat all of the incumbents based on discounting. You don't get to wake up one day and go, I'm going to reinvent my business model and be able to thrive against a structural undercutting on my operating expenses. That is the core theory of the whole concept of the innovator's dilemma, the innovator's solution. If you guys have read that book, the core thesis of that is disruption always comes from underneath. And when it arrives on your doorstep, it's not 5%. It's not 10% cheaper. It is an order of magnitude cheaper. And you cannot reorganize in time to now compete in that new world. You either start a new business or you just literally go away. So right now is the time to start paying attention to this stuff. But I do think that there is a ring of optimism in terms of what you should be doing around this. If you guys are familiar, you remember back in the early days, 2015, the early days of AI, Jeff Hinton, the guy that scared the crap out of all of us with his projections about AI would obsolete Americans and eliminate all the jobs. If you remember, in 2015, the one that he highlighted specifically, he was like, AI is going to do everything, but there's one specific job you should stop training people for right now. And that was to be a radiologist who looks at scans to identify disease, tumor, cancer, etc. Jeff came out just this week because there was a new report that was issued. I saw it on the news. It's been out there a lot. If you've not seen this conversation, where the American Radiological Society and all of the others that are associated with this have determined definitively that while AI will make a radiologist radically more efficient and productive, meaning one technician can service more patients, see more scans, they have determined definitively AI cannot and will not replace radiologists, because there is intuition, there is human service, and then there's this thing called empathy associated with the diagnosis and the communication. The society of humans who do this have come out and said, it will make us more efficient. It cannot replace the humans, to which somebody placed a question to Jeffrey Hinton and said, yo, Jeff, you're the one who said they were going away. What is your response? To which his response was, I believe I spoke too broadly in the early days, which is the most milquetoast way of saying, yep, I was dead wrong, that I've heard in a long, long time. But they're coming for you. They're
given
coming
the empathy
for you
of a lot of doctors. It's not clear to me that he was wrong at all.
I know. Exactly. So yep. I want to say that what I think is most interesting about this is the fact that for a very long time, we've talked about even back to the early days of like a value-added reseller and just like an input, like we've talked about the services component of everything that we've done. Even when you talk about the transition from delivering technology services to business services, it has all been about services and knowledge. What I find really fascinating and different about this is a services provider is now building technology, directly building their own technology. That is different, right? That, in my mind, is different. We have oftentimes been, you know, we talk about being the channel, right? And all linked together. Well, in this case, an organization is actively cutting out a portion and saying, no, we're not going to get these solutions and integrate them from software vendors. We are going to do some of this ourselves, and we're going to deploy it ourselves. Whether or not they're right, that will be, you know, we're all going to do another topic on this, but like that's different. And what I'm going to start seeing is there's also the element of like, hey, the level of scale of these providers with the amount of money that is now flowing in from private equity, from venture capital, is allowing them to make moves that most providers cannot do. You know, again, my favorite stat, 81% of this space does less than $10 million in revenue. Well, the other 19%, some of them have money to do things that your average provider cannot. That's new. And that's going to result in some different behaviors. We're going to see different competitive landscape. I'm not a doom and gloomer. I think there's room for everybody. But I would be irresponsible in my analyst role of not saying, that's different, everybody. Like, I'm going to circle that and I want to watch their behaviors and say, this will be a slightly different landscape than it was before this.
Well, I think it's a little different, but we have a lot of products in this industry that started out with some MSP built a tool, you know, sold it to other MSPs, sold it to themselves, used it themselves, and then realized, oh, I could make this bigger. And one after another of them have become some of the biggest vendors in our industry. So it's not entirely new, you know, that's kind of what we do for a living.
Maybe. I will say like those usually like there's a lot of garage stories. There's not somebody dropped $200 million of investment into an existing provider. Maybe. But
yeah, once again, on that note, size does matter, in fact, and you need to be aware that big boys are coming. But this is a fantastic transition into our third topic here, because what I want to focus on is it's an index that I saw in The Economist that was tracking the performance of the S&P 500 over the last year plus, right? Last 14 months or so, they've been tracking the performance of the index. It's ups, it's downs. But what they're highlighting is the separation between the performance of the overall S&P 500 versus the S&P 500 software, meaning they're taking out all of those big players that have hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars of money to put into R&D. And in the last week, well, you guys have probably seen the headlines. A lot of those share prices, they ate a lot of crap. They tanked in levels that were unseen in the last 20 years, other than the immediate aftermath of the pandemic, which they then recovered right away. And it made me stop and go, what is up here? Well, if you get inside of this story, it is all about AI just released. All the players that you know the names of, they released new models, either for reference LLM or for software development, that are so effective, that are so much more capable than what we've seen with our cute little AI toys that we've been using for a few years, that the market legitimately ran scared from software developers who sell license or subscription to business customers. It was all the big names you know that have been just flying in terms of their valuation. And then the AI providers came out and said, hey, here's tools where anybody, Dave, even without $200 million in investment, anybody can write their own software, and they're coming for you. So my question to you guys is this hype? Is this fear? Is this legit? Will AI-developed software actually replace software?
Okay. I have very strong opinions on that. So first off, I have to lay out and say, Measuring the S&P 500 is bullshit anyway, because what it really is seven. It's really seven companies that are driving all the growth right now anyway, not 500. On top of that, because we then take the subset that are doing ridiculous things and now analyze them, funny, the graph looks weird, okay? Right? Because this subset are doing weird things on a metric that's already useless. The second thing that I have to say about the markets is, as someone who does invest for the long term in a diversified portfolio, this is all gambling, people. They are not experts. They do not know anything more than regular people, and most of the time they know less. Okay, they actually know less. Most investors, if you look at their performance against the average diversified portfolio, do worse.
Right.
You are in better shape by just putting your money in a diversified portfolio than listening to any of these experts, because they don't know what they're talking about.
Dave, but if we agree with your analysis there, if we agree, okay, cool. So they might not be accurate. Let me ask you the other part of the question.
Yes.
Will AI software development replace software?
No. Then the answer is no, 100% no. Will it augment? Absolutely. I do believe we're going to see a transformation in the way software is developed. I do think, but by the way, does anybody want just some dude throwing code out into the world with when life is on the line, there's a reason there's a process, right? Because you need to test and validate all of that. And most of this is so black box that we cannot do. We have to do the process for quality checking. And most of the problem, like most of the cost of managing software is not in the development of the code. It's the ongoing maintenance, management, systems operations, all of that stuff, which is not magically going to get transformed by AI. Will it also be impacted by AI? Absolutely. Yeah. But I see this as a transformation, definitely not a replacement.
Absolutely.
And so what you're going to find out is this AI code still then needs to go through the development process to be validated and used, which is called software development. And then we're just back where we started using tools to create.
Well, and I will put QuickBooks or Xero up against Cousin Larry's Pretty Good I Made My Own Financial Package any day of the week, especially when you get to the point where you say, hey, ChatGPT, write me a financial package just like QuickBooks, only better. Okay, you know, 18 minutes later, there you go. Yeah, I'm not putting my business on that.
I laugh. I literally watched a group of MSPs on Reddit talking about building their own PSA using, and I'm like, does anyone want to put their customer data in that thing?
Yeah, and 15 years ago, when Mark Andreessen told us that, you know, software is going to eat the world, people were saying, oh, you should just, you know, you can create your own PSA in SharePoint. Just do this. How many people became billionaires writing their own PSA in SharePoint? Roughly speaking, I think it's zero, right? Round number. But, you know,
but so I know at least one wrote a real PSA and became a billionaire.
It will change the landscape, but I wouldn't take my money out of the large software companies. I'm not going to remove my money from Microsoft and say, oh, I'm going to go with somebody else who might do better than you because those guys are scared. Investors, to Dave's point, they like security. They like knowledge. And when they have lack of knowledge, when they have insecurity, then they take their money and do something else with it. Even if that's a foolish decision, that's what they do.
So yeah, and I will take both of your platforms, I believe, again, very responsible analysis of the gambling that happens in the stock markets. I buy it. I totally agree with that. What I will say is I do not believe that AI will eliminate software development, but as I mentioned in a previous topic, I believe that it will supercharge disruptive innovation. The innovator's dilemma of I'm currently the market leader, therefore my job is to A, develop software, but B, maintain everything that I already have in the marketplace. To the degree that I have a lion's share of current market presence, if I have market share today, I'm going to spend naturally more of my money maintaining my existing stuff than I will developing new stuff, because otherwise the people who pay me will become disappointed and walk away and pay somebody else, right? So that, I believe we're about to see that get supercharged, because Yes, you have to be good at software development. Yes, you have to have product managers, and you have to have lifecycle management and performance management and integration strategies. All of those things remain true. It's just that for the little groups of people who actually are good at that stuff, you know, think Bill Gates and Paul Allen in a conference room that they borrowed from somebody else. Like, those two guys invented a software empire, not software code. They didn't invent that. They invented the software empire that grew into everything. Now, they did that. How many other two guys in a conference room have done that since them? To Carl's point, some, but not all. I believe those two guys are out there right now. Well, and what would have cost them $200 million to just get started, I think you're going to start to see market share erosion from some really smart startups that the big guys simply won't be fast enough to adapt to.
I'm going to leave us with a hanging thought. Everyone's talking about that transformation. I'm much more interested in the idea of paying off technical debt using AI. That you, the ability to go back and revisit code that has been languishing or sitting around too long. No one's talking about that. I'm way more interested in that than I am of this, like, it's just going to magically fix everything. But that's another podcast.
Exactly. That brings us to the top of the hour, the bottom of the hour, where at the end of the half hour, and that'll do it for episode 215 of the Killing It podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.